Formula Access. Today, we have a guest that's part of a network from Dilara. Several months ago, Dilara reached out to me to begin a series of guests to come on the show to provide you guys insight into their company, their people, their initiatives, and things that just generally are, frankly, exciting and interesting to hear about. Today, we've got Stefano DePani. He is the CEO and GM for Dilara America. Such a sweet guest. We get into the history of Dilara. We get into the people for Dilara. We get into IndyCar. We get into all things Dilara. You guys, this is a really exciting episode. Stefano is my kind of people. And such a great conversation. I'm so excited for you guys to hear this. Enjoy. Formula Access. Today, we bring you a very different kind of guest. A very special guest, a guest that came from another guest. A while back, we had Alice from Dilara on the show. She came in and she provided her kind of her story, her wisdom, her input within kind of Aero. And that prompted a conversation between some of the marketing people over at Dilara through some recommendations from other guests that we've had on the show. And that ended up into a conference call about a series of episodes about different aspects and areas of a chassis manufacturer such as Dilara. So today we bring you a special guest, Stefano DePonti, who is the CEO and GM of Dilara America. So Stefano, welcome. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ryan, and good afternoon to everyone, all the fans that are listening to the show. Thanks for having me. You said I'm special. I'm not a special, but I feel special to be here and talking to you and to the fans. So thank you very much for having me, and thanks for the previous interview that you've done with my colleague Alex.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to kick back on the whole special thing because you guys are very busy. I think this is an industry of people that are very, very busy in a good way. And your time is very, very valuable. And I have been very, very impressed with the intentionality of Dilara in general and trying to engage fans. You know, you're not necessarily in the spectator side, but just the desire to engage the fan is definitely there. It's showcased, and I'm really excited for just the kind of lineup of guests that, you know, kind of cross over. We have a lot of IndyCar on our show. We have a lot of Formula One on the show. You guys have a lot of crossover between the two, but we also do other series on the show, and Dilara is like everything. So seriously, you are special, and we are very grateful for your time. So
thank you.
Just at a super high level, For fans listening to the show, who are you, and you know what do you do today?
I'm echoing what you just said on your introduction. My name is Stefano DePonti. I'm originally from Monza, but I moved to Indianapolis, Indiana, 23 years ago, specifically to follow up the path of the Dilara involvement here in the United States, starting with the IRL and now became IndyCar, until up to date, which is I'm serving as a CEO of the company here in Speedway, Indiana, the only outside Italy headquarters for Dilara, just across the street from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Pretty big event coming your way in a couple of weeks.
Yes. May, obviously, it offers us the time to be very, very, very busy. But obviously, it is the result of the preparation that, you know, for us, is, we're always in May, because there's always something evolving during the previous races to get to May. Obviously, for the series, the Indianapolis 500, traditionally, it is the most important event, I would say that, just because of the volume of fans and attending audience, they will come to the track in one day. I mean, I don't think there's any equal sporting event likewise the Indy 500. So there's, the numbers is very varied, from surely more than 200,000 people. I went to the Kentucky Derby, and it's not, I mean, I was impressed, but obviously if you have the chance to visit and experience the 500, like I always said, it's not only, obviously, the what, you know, the motto is the greatest spectacular racing event in the world. I think is also a life experience, because in one day you do experience all of that. The race, obviously, it is the most important action is happening during the Memorial Day weekend, but obviously there's also other connected activity started at the early May. So May for Indy, it is obviously is a sacred month.
Yes, and I have never been, and the more and more that I engage with Tiffany and team, I'm just like, I'm sitting back here going,
living, I understood you're not far away from us, so I think is if I can make it public here, we can officially invite you to come and enjoy with us the famous race.
If Stefano's inviting, I'm making it happen. I have no idea how I do that, but I'm making it happen. So, okay, in all seriousness, thank you, by the way, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
We'll chat later. So CEO of Dallara here in the States, how does that differ from the home base or the mothership in Italy? How does your role differ from the CEO in Italy?
Well, paradoxically, I don't remember last year's the past I worked in Italy. So my life and experience always brought me to work outside my own country, which is, even if I do consider this one my own now also, in addition to Italy. Well, as you know, Dallara is an engineering company, and thanks God here, we're growth enough to be able to support and taking care of the major racing series in North America. Open wheels and not open wheels. So in a different, just to cite the sanctioning body from IndyCar, IMSA, and NASCAR, we got them all. Obviously, this is, I have an excellent teams working with me that on a daily basis, they taking care either in networking and in a relationship with those sanctioning bodies to follow up the technical sporting rules and enhance more and more the Dallara relationship with them, and also as well as another excellent team that's taking care of the daily operation here, because what we're trying to create in here in the U.S. A small replication of the Dallara world in Italy in terms of activity from manufacturing and engineering. So that's, we try to do both here in racing. Obviously, we just need to please our customers, which needs to, with our work that we do in terms of the supply chain and technical support, commercial support. But there's also another channel to follow, which is the channel to make the company grow, either in these two areas or to find out different business opportunity according to the technologies and the, in a few words, what we're good at. So we are essentially an engineering company. We deal in designing expertise in composite carbon fiber simulation and so forth, So we're trying to apply these core competences and trying to find out wherever other businesses can fit in what we do daily. And especially, there's a lot of synergy in racing, motorsports, and in the fields of defense and aerospace.
How do you grow your market here in the States? I mean, I get the sense that you pretty much have your hands on almost every series allowable. I mean, what series barring Formula One don't you touch? Which you've already been in that through Haas, I believe. So what else is left? Sir.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the LADA is taking care pretty much all the racing series in the world, in all the continents, from Formula 3 to Formula 1. You mentioned Haas. So in the U.S., we're taking care of the major series here in North America. Obviously, there's the two factors. We can grow with them, obviously, to be able to support them with more and more manufacturing capability here in the U.S. So we do not have to be depending from other vendors outside our own area, which is one of the key for a company or for an executive to improve nowadays, considering all the supply chain issues we have all over the world and the difficulties to put our hands on the parts and the components that we need commercially from other vendors. Obviously, one of the primary elements, if you're working racing, is delivery. So you got to be ready sooner, you know, late, ready or not, the race start with or without you. So you better be there with your products. Otherwise, you will pay the consequences, and not obviously they're not good things. The LADA knocking on wood has never had such a bad record that a team, a customer, a car never had the opportunity to start the race because of a lack of the components. Do we struggle? Yes, every day, like as well as other manufacturing, but we try to accomplish all the targeting supply that we achieved. We are into it and considering working also with the major manufacturers and the major series. This is something that gives us a kind of proud. So this is one way to grow. That means growth in our organization to make these things happen and be more and more every day supportive with our customer. And obviously, and the other, like I mentioned before, the other way to grow is to find other area that can fit on what we do daily here, but in a different fields.
Is there a primary area or series of focus for Dallara? I mean, is there like a core business unit, I guess you would call it?
Is that obviously Dallara's DNA is racing. I mean, racing is a DNA for Dallara, which is we got him in the blood. Mr. Dallara founded the company specifically because he wanted himself to create something to go racing, to not only to participate, but most importantly, to win. So, and his strategy and this element is very well present in the company coming from him, which is, trust me, is... He's, you know, he has. We celebrated 50 years anniversary of the company, and you can imagine how old he is now, but still very super. He's the youngest guy we got in the company in terms of you know, energy, in terms of visioning, idea on how to innovate the company and so forth. Essentially, repeating what I mentioned before, as considering the LADA as an engineering company, we three mainly expertises in designing and the knowledge of sophisticated materials like carbon fiber, a composite material that we work every day on our products, aerodynamics. So the study to design a competitive vehicle through aerodynamics elements and the simulation, vehicle simulation, is also important as a technical tools for the company. So with these three competencies, I mean, we can source or knock in any other doors that where the products can be obviously use these three elements to make their products competitive, reliable, safety, lights, and so forth. And considering the way the economy is going now, especially here in the United States, obviously we are geared up differently compared to other nations, let me tell, in the way we have in the way of the business concepts. We try, we fail, we try again, and so forth. So, but anyway, there's some sort of new adventures and new chances the engineering company like the LARA cannot stand still and waiting for not at least try to be involved. I'm talking about the space economy. I'm talking about the aeromobility. I'm talking about the electrification of vehicles. I'm talking about the autonomous vehicles. All these kind of things that the technology is bringing every day in to the world, and there's some field where we want to be part of it, because there's a lot of things for us to learn, but also there's another field where we can bring our contribution for what with the element that we already do know, that we think that we can bring some beneficial to the table.
For those three kind of core competencies of the business, where are you most passionate about personally? Like you as in Stefano, where? Yeah. What fires you
up? I'm not an engineer by background, so I obviously... I mean, I've been racing all my life, and I mature my experience rotating, around these three elements, because wherever I've been to, from Formula One to other series I worked, these are the three elements that make you go faster, safe, if you want, and competitive. If I have to say, obviously the composite carbon fiber world is very fascinating, because I see a lot of connection and synergy with other things that we do in other fields, especially in aerospace, aviation technologies, defense. So obviously I would say that now we're living in the world that all the technology and the products designed, they want it to be light and lighter. So obviously the element of composite carbon fiber, it's number one element. But, you know, if you see this in a turbine for environmental business, for instance, I mean, they're using the same principle that we are using to go faster in racing. So they have the big wing. So that came out from under an aerostatic. Have to be light, so have to be done in composite material, and obviously all the gears and the mechanism inside, they have to be the least friction in order to be the idle have to turn efficiently. So this, you see, that's if you take this as a very simple example, how the racing technology, the racing set mind to as an engineer. As the engineer thinks, they can be potentially brought up in other field and to be beneficial in other fields.
How do you gauge success as kind of a call it a spec series where all cars are in theory created equal? Yeah. We can use IndyCar as the example. Yeah. So
spec series is
How do you gauge success in that?
Well, it's a good question. Obviously, in there's a spec series in all over the world, and obviously, it's a situation that is not dictated by a manufacturer. In this case, Dallara. It's not Dallara that decided that IndyCar have to be with, as a spec series. So this is a as a result of different elements, and I think the most important is the economy one. And obviously, if you want racing. This is, again, in my personal opinion, like it or not, it became a great tool for entertainment.
Sure.
So there are some very few in occasion where you can take out something specifically in an engineering set mind and then transfer to the particular OEM for the daily cars used and me and you drive every day. So in terms to do that, you try to do an entertainment with considering the economy value, the economy compromise has changed a lot even culturally. I mean, if you take a racing going back in a days when everything started, they had a different element. They are not anymore there now. So you have to take in consideration what is the best to make the sport running the way you want it. And obviously, as an expensive sport because mm-hmm. of the technology behind. The spec series, by the way, enhance the safety aspect rather than the competition, because everybody is using the same tools, but the manufacturer is responsible to produce and deliver a tools which is have to be saved, at least corresponding and be designing in certain parameters. You know, if you see wherever you have competition with different manufacturers, because their direct involvement of manufacturers is there. I take IMSA, for example, or NASCAR. In IndyCar, we have a competition with manufacturers on engines suppliers. Mm-hmm. We got two, and in the chassis wise, we are the one. We are the one that supply the chassis for everybody. But I think it's not anymore like back in the days or Formula One. Obviously, if you want to make it fan selections, do you have a Ferrari fans, McLaren fans, Mercedes fans, Red Bull fans, so forth? Here, not necessarily. You have a lot of fans. Yes, we do have fans. God, a lot of fans. They are following us what we do daily. But they're more. Which is, I think, is a great fact to follow. I mean, you are fans of the drivers. I mean, the human being is the protagonist of the sports. It's not the mechanical supplier or anything related to a mechanicals or vehicle stuff. I think one of the major things that make me passionate of the sports is the human being side.
Sure.
I mean, obviously the engineers is passionate for other things, but it's nothing to do with the fans mentality, I think.
So is it fair to say that the success is gauged on, you know, the engine integration? You know, can you work with Chevy, Honda, and those engine suppliers, and then safety? Because you're not necessarily competing against another chassis to say, well, we're a faster chassis.
Yeah, this is the element, obviously the safety is the number one to we keep in consideration when we design either a whole car or single components related to the car. Reliability, driver ability. I mean, fans that want to, we want to produce a tool that produce good racing. So obviously, the fans, it's they are the one they enjoy in racing. So and it's our homework and duty to produce such tools for to entertain them, as well as to make sure that the drivers is safe. And then there's an obviously, which is the biggest challenge every day, is the economic compromise, because you have to produce the highest quality product to reflect this element, and you cannot compromise on quality, because otherwise you don't want to deliver it and cheap products. It's not part of our culture, it's not part of our mentality. So but you know, every day we have to find the best way. We have to battle to always to be on top of quality, but also be cost effective.
Yeah,
for our internally cost, of course, and for most importantly, to please our customers.
You guys do deliver that. I mean, just an IndyCar specifically is a beautiful chassis. It's a good looking car, and it produces great racing. I mean, you look at like, I don't know, you give an example of like Romain Grosjean. You know, he came over here and, you know, and I remember when he was making the decision, was like, you know, I have safety concerns. Obviously he had a really tough last race, but, you know, it started as a road course driver because he was scared of the oval, and now he does it all. And I think that's a testament to his confidence in the safety standards and the quality of what obviously you guys are building. So, I mean, I guess that's a great metric of success is, you know, you're taking as a sport, but also as a chassis, you are taking some of the highest quality drivers in the world into your car.
Yeah, your point is making a lot of sense. Did use a former Formula One excellent driver. I like to talk about another example of an excellent from former Formula One drivers, Ericsson. If you remember, two years ago, winning a race in Nashville, Tennessee, he did crash at the first lap. In Nashville is downtown Nashville. I mean, they put together a racetrack in a very excellent way, but we're still talking about, you know, street courses. I mean, there's no special asphalt, special way out in case you run off or something. So, I mean, he almost put himself, the cars upside down, they flip it after a few corners, the first lap, and he ended up to win the race. And, you know, it was a very competitive race, difficult to pass because of the characteristics of the track. So it was a combination of things. Like you say, IndyCar is producing excellent type of racing, and we have excellent drivers too. So the determination and the characteristic to be able to adapt as a driver from a super speedway track like a 2.5 Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you go over 220 miles per hour, and then, you know, the following week you race in a street of Detroit. It's something that you must, as a driver, have some kind of talent to adapt on these kind of circumstances, especially if you are a winning driver. So this is what makes IndyCar super, we say America cool. So,
what is an engineering company, a chassis desire? What are the initiatives that you guys are driving for like the next decade or the next kind of the future of Dilawr? Because you guys have some really cool kind of projects going on.
Great question. I would not call it the advantage, because it's something that Dilawr has created thanks the reputation as a company and the professional way to work in different cities and different teams. So if you see Dall'Ara as a company, as an engineering company, producing race cars, we do from Formula One to very little Formula. In addition to that, years ago, Dall'Ara developed also an academy environment, education. Mm-hmm. So that means to help Dall'Ara itself as a company to learn from the academic world, but on the same time to deliver something to academic world. So there's this exchange of ideas and activity under the highlight of the subject of the innovation technology. So our duty is, of course, to work with the sanctioning bodies, whichever it is, from the Formula One to IndyCar or whatever, and we try to serve this institution in the best way we can. That means pay a lot of attention of safety, to be proactive in terms of what we learn from previous experience, and unfortunately you learn a lot from accidents. Sure. So crashes, it's a good, I mean, paradoxically speaking, is a good school to learn out of it. And obviously the other parameter, other tools we're talking about, part of our expertise is simulations. So we do a lot of that, and we try to be proactive when we work with these cities, with these sanctioning bodies, especially in terms of whenever we are in a process or we're going to start a process to design a new car for them. So this is our missions, basically.
Changing lanes here slightly. In your role specifically, I think that motorsports is a different type of industry than most. And just from the numerous people that I've had on the show that I've interacted with, and just my time as a fan, is that it's you have business, which is a paycheck, a career, it's your tool. And then you have motorsports, which is all of those things, but it's also almost like a wild passion. As a leader in motorsports, you know, I would imagine you've had jobs elsewhere, you've interacted with leaders in other industries. How do you feel like that differs, being a leader inside an organization of very passionate people versus other industries where you're a leader of workers, I guess?
Yeah, it's great. Number one, in motorsports, again, you do a lot of, motorsports is embracing a lot of professionals, executive in the different areas. But what I think makes motorsports unique is the connection that you can develop, you can establish, and learning a lot, because at the end of the day, especially racing motorsports that do travel all over the world, you learn other stuff. You meet people internationally. You like it or not, you have a possibility to learn and experience other cultures. So this kind of thing, they're very well considerate, but I think they're equally important for anybody who's facing the sport. Obviously, then you can develop your passion according to what you like to do at the most. But you know, for marketing people, for business people, motorsport is a huge tools to connect worldwide or locally or regionally or statewide with other people. I just came from a convention in downtown where, you know, there was a meeting with all economic board of the town. And obviously Indiana is a special, in Indianapolis in particular, is a special location because of the Indy 500, well known all over the world to people that love motorsports and people that do not love motorsport. But obviously this is, it is an icon that makes the business card for the city. So, and the premises for the state of Indiana and the city of Indianapolis is they got people here starting from the highest institution from the state. The governor himself would be going to, is traveling a lot, you know, to worldwide and go also to famous races in the world with the premises to establish connection. And they, and this connection will eventually beneficial the economy of the states. We have a university here that do have a specific engineering course. They teach motorsports elements from telemetry, aerodynamic, or not more specifically related to racing. So that means that guys or girls that want to study engineering and specifically learn about motorsports, they moving from other states, potentially come to Indiana's university in order to be appealing. They establish themselves some kind of course that you know, have motorsport in it. The STEM programs have a motorsports elements in it. So racing, it is a great tool to aggregate people, to connect people, to appealing people in a different elements. I can say the defense world also is looking at, especially on the ergonomic side, is looking at the racing world as a reference, not only in the materials, but you know how the specific soldier, he or she sitting in a specific vehicle, feel comfortable when they operate in the office. So they, and there's no any other, I would say, field like racing that can offer all of that. When you design a car in a very limited area, limited space, you have to be all modular to make it easier to make, to mechanics to assemble and disassemble it, safe for the drivers. You know, there we're talking about material again. It's a combination of things. Racing can it's a catalyst of for these different elements, and it's cool. So yes,
what in your career, 23 years of Dilara, 22 years of Dilara, what's the best advice, guidance, wisdom that's been given to you? What, like, what have you kind of put in your pocket? And
advice to me?
To you, yeah.
Myself?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I came here for the Dilara 23 years ago, but I was lucky also to have experience with the Dilara back in the days when the team I worked in Formula One used the Dilara chassis. I was working for the team. The team was BMS Scuderia Italia. And we were using the Dilara chassis. So basically, more or less, is the same business model that Haas is doing. So we were doing that years ago. Uh-huh. Team was located in North Italy, in Brescia. We had a Dilara design and manufacture the chassis for us, and then we were using different engines according to wherever we were able to achieve, including the Ferrari engine we had. The question was, what kind of suggestions or
best advice?
Best advice to myself: finish as soon as I can my PhD in U.S. history. So I need to do that and move forward to my next side career. To I love U.S. history, and I had the opportunity also to teach this in some the topic in, at college level.
So you also teach American history as well.
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah, but in again the linkage between to having a motorsports in the academic world as a part of the engineering course, motorsport is also business, and you do know business if you know a little bit of history of what kind of business you are into it. So this is the topic I'm trying. I'm not going to. It's not teaching, you know, the order of battle of the of Gettysburg or you know, the Civil War campaigns. No, but you know, element of history related to business to be beneficial in motorsports.
Good for you. Good for you. How did you get into motors?
I'm taking a PhD in history, U.S. history, so not in business. I'm not that smart too, but history is something I love.
Yeah, you are. You're a CEO of a major motorsports company. You're good.
Yeah,
how did this all start? So going back to your days of Monza, like, have you always been a motorsports fan and wanted to get into the industry? Yeah.
No doubt, absolutely. Yeah, I was born. I never worked in a different field than racing in my life. So, jumping from different series, different teams. So, Europe, U.S., etc. But yeah, you everything started my passion for racing. You mean or
yeah? How did it all start?
Obviously, being, you know, I was born in Monza. I grew up in Monza or nearby. Obviously, the Monza racetrack with Monza, as you know, is the racetrack is is sitting in a big park, and back in the days during my I was much younger, obviously it was one of the best locations to go and hang out with and maybe try to climb up on top of the banking, which is a big challenge, trust me. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance or if you've seen any clips or pictures. It's pretty elevated. And there was also traditionally there's some linkage between Indianapolis and Monza. They used to race the race of the two worlds. Mm-hmm. So back in the days on ovals, Europeans were coming in America to race the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Americans going to Monza to race that type of race. I think they did race until 1966, 67. AJ Foyt raced there, two answers. Unfortunately, both passed away. I'm assuming was one of the sparkling that initiate my passion for racing.
And was that before you went to university or?
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. We're talking about 10 years. I was 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. Yeah. I could barely go to the elementary school. But yeah.
So then did you go to university for business or?
In Italy, I did a technical school in Italy, yes. And I finishing, continued my education in the U.S. With a PhD in U.S. history. Yeah.
Okay. How did you end up at Dallara then? What was the role?
In 2001, basically, I came over and Dallara was already present in the U.S. since 97. Sorry, that happened because of the split between the major open wheel series here. It was the kart, mm-hmm. Champ karts, consequently, and there was more claiming that they were going more international, more driven off the American mentality to concept racing, which is traditionally ovals racing is big part of it. So mm-hmm. they created this new series, and in 97, 96, they started with the old, not the old chassis, but existing chassis you could buy available on the market. And the back then, the owner of the series, the Indy Racing League, was Tony George, mm-hmm. Whose family also owned the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Came to Italy, recommended make it another gentleman, facilitate the introduction to Dallara and Mr. Dallara in particular. And he was, you know, in a need to have at least 15 chassis to race in this new series. Mm-hmm. And Dallara was appointed as one of the two or three manufacturers back in the days. And then he had the chance to start his adventure in America, which is they had to learn from scratch, because those races were only raced on ovals, and Dallara didn't know anything about it. He sure. didn't know anything about the American cultures of racing back in the days, just a little bit because of the 333 SP Ferrari that used to race in IMSA in early 90s was designed and produced by Dallara. So that was basically the limitation of Dallara experience in the US. And then it came the IRL, which has been a great opportunity for the company to start in not only in a different series, but the opportunity to expand the business here in the US with the IRL.
And they brought you on board to do that?
I came on board in 2001. They needed basically a commercial figure here who's doing this figure had to cover the commercial aspects, have to cover the customer service, interact with the race teams, and be in liaison with Italy, mm-hmm. because everything was made, produced, manufactured in Italy, and shipped over to the United States. Dallara was working through an official distributor until we ended up to design the new car, and with the advent of the new car, part of the business plan was also to have a Dallara presence here with the engineering manufacturing center. But before the 2010, I was the only one here. I was working on the commercial customer service side, and then there was an engineer taking care, Americans, mm-hmm. Taking care of the commercial, the technical sides with the team and reporting on daily and racist basis, all the issues, problem, improvement, and so forth.
So a lifetime of experience inside of motorsports.
Yeah.
What's been your pinch me moment? What's the moment, like a starstruck moment, the pinch me moment where you're just like, I can't believe this is my life. I can't believe.
Yeah, yes. Obviously, when Mr. Dallara called me an appointment, they offered me this opportunity to come to the U.S. U.S. has always been, I love this country, of course, as you can not notice. So it's always been, from talking about it and also from the racing aspect, it was always part of my dream to come here and have a professional experience in working. God knows how many resume and stuff I used to basically distribute here to different entity teams to have a chance to work here, which is obviously they never had the chance to do it. So at one point, was basically, you know, stopped dreaming. And by the way, I always came to watch motorsports event in the US, from IndyCar, IMSA racing, NASCAR, by myself. When I had the chance to be here for other opportunity, I always stay. Either I came either earlier or stay longer, just for this opportunity to go to assist the race. So at, I was, you know, 35 years old, I basically stopped dreaming this opportunity. I was not even thinking anymore to spend to start a career or to start an experience in the US or and start what I've been doing. So a phone ring, Giampaolo Dallara called me, did offer me the job, and I, without hesitation, I remember there was in the summer 2000, in January 2001, I was already here. So I think that's been not only at career level, but life level, because I had to change completely my life. So this is my life is here. It's, you know, as much as I go back to Italy two or three times, but you know, here I'm here all the time. So this, I think, has been the, from going back to your question, the you know, the most positive impact, professional impact, but also social, from the social point of view, experience point of view, impacted my life for.
That's such a rare quality these days for somebody to take a role and just, this is my thing. This is what I want to do, and I'm gonna stay. I love
Yeah,
it.
I at one point, yes, I lost my faith, but then you know, it's like when you've been shocked on and then you know, you have it back, and it happened. So it's,
What?
you know, it's when we say, you know, when the train goes by only once, so you better jump on it, otherwise you lose the chance. And I didn't want to lose that, so.
What didn't you expect, or what has surprised you about a career in motorsport? Something that you didn't expect it would be like?
I did want an experience in motorsport, a presence in motorsport for myself. I did not envision myself in a career. I did not want to be studying motorsport, hoping, thinking, you know, to become such and such. So I wanted to do basically what I wanted to do because I love motorsports, and again, it gave me a lot of opportunity chances. So I just do follow, and I did follow my passion. And then obviously, when you do things passionately, this is the first element in order to have it accomplished, so that, you know, the merit comes consequently. So to appoint you or to give you more responsibility, more chance to grow or something. But I definitely, my fuel was not a fuel to become or to be one day in a row. So I did not really, I did not, I never had any in my idea. And it's not part of my ethic too. So this is the way of living.
I always normally ask people like a moment of overcoming a challenge, or just kind of like an impactful lesson in your career. And I feel like guests struggle to answer that question when they're very, very passionate about their career. And I, you know, ha has there been a moment like that for you, or has the passion made it not like hurtful hard, but maybe difficult?
Definitely. I mean, the challenges are every day. Obviously, they are the challenge they did reach the peak, especially when you lose somebody, especially a driver, because of an accident or because of the, because of, sorry.
Oh, you're good.
It never rang. And then, you know, it rang in a, the least opportune moment. So obviously, these things, they do mark your career. They do questioning your career, so what you want to do. But again, the like when we were talking before, the ethic of motorsport has changed a lot in several several years and decades. So in the past, unfortunately, these situations were very common, but also were it was very common the following day. The impact that the tragedy produced was not obviously seen and considering now like now today if it's something bad should happen. So this is obviously there are some kind of setback that make you think if it's the something that you want to do again. And when you're dealing with this ethic problems, they're questioning either from inside, which is inside of you, inside your team, inside your community, or from external entities, like you know, it happens all the time when we had a tragedy in racing. Some entities, some people, they're questioning why do we race, why do we have racing, why, you know, and obviously the challenge is they make you think maybe you are in the wrong spot when you read this kind of comments, but the passion obviously overcome and they give you the strength to move forward and, you know, keep doing what you wanted to do it. And because let's not remember, this is also the drivers wanted to do it. So they 100% their own risk and do know, you know, what happened or what is not happening, you know, in when they are in a racing situation.
I feel like that's something that we forget a lot about this industry because we are so blessed with technology that it is safe, but there's also an inherent risk associated with it.
Absolutely.
Meaning, well, you know, yeah. I go to work and somebody uses my product and gets hurt. You know, I was definitely not the answer I was expecting, but I definitely connect with that and get that.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, definitely it is the racing is dangerous.
No sure. Doubt.
I mean, even in America, for liability point of view, they're still making, you know, sign liability consents and stuff that they to remind you that. Having said that, there are companies, there are entities, there are a group of people very well, in my opinion, educated, prepared, experienced, and so forth. They do work to make to enhance the safety aspect every day and in every single products they do, from an entire chassis to a single component, tires, gearbox, whatever. So safety must be there as a default. But I don't like the fact that sometimes it comes out as a justification to say, okay, yeah, we race, but it's safe. No, it's not safe. Racing is dangerous. Obviously, safety must be there. Like I said, in technology, in design, and let's not use it as to justify something, you know, for the sake of to please some group, some community, some medias.
Well, here's
I don't know if you agree with me or not in with this statement, but
no, I do.
I think safety must be there 100%, no doubt, and not only, you know, continuously improved, continuously enhance it in different aspects. But if you keep talking about safety, it's like you keep talking to do an element to justify something.
I agree. So, with the teacher inside of you, the leader inside of you, somebody that has chased their passion and, you know, has built a successful career behind that, what advice do you have for young people that, you know, they see motorsports as this big intimidating machine that, you know, only the highest level people get to? What advice do you have for people that are like seeking a career and want to do this as a life ambition?
I clone and I paraphrasing from my boss, Gianpaolo Dallara, which is always say, learn from your mistakes. Back in the day, now we learn from and move forward, obviously, don't do it twice. He was always saying that either recently I brought a group of people from the U.S. to Dallara. We're trying again to intensify this academic relationship and what Dallara offer in academics, so that could be beneficial the school in Italy as well as in the U.S. But anyway, and he was repeating this. He was saying that when he was working in a company, he's coming from a great, you know, engineering background, worked for Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, and he said in every this company back in the 60s, obviously social media is not existing. We didn't have channels you can log on and see things like me and you we've been doing now. But they say this company, especially one, I don't mention the name, they're used to in a drawing office. They used to display, they put in display not cool stuff, decast modeling cars, but components of cars they broke, components they did not survive, they not passed some QC inspections, component that caused problem maybe to the company. So, and they were there specifically for a mission. The mission was to teach to engineers, okay, you designed these parts, you screwed up, don't do it again, learn from it and do it better. So bottom line is doing mistake is a good way to learn. Don't be afraid, don't be discouraged. Just try to do better and don't, with intention, don't do the second times. So this is the advice. And obviously, you know, there's a, you know, rhetoric, follow your passion, follow your instinct, you know, work hard. So those are obviously their constitution of everyone, depending, regardless if you want to be an engineer, so in marketing, in racing or not racing. But I think there's the fact of the mistakes is a pretty good one.
I love that. Obviously, people are perfectionists. They want to be perfect, but I think you never achieve anything near perfection without making a mistake and finding those guardrails in life. Yep. Of, you know, what works and what doesn't. You have to push the limit, and sometimes that limit is the wall, and you know, you gotta rub it. Are you good?
No, I say paradoxically is a good parameter. You know, mistakes is a good parameter to learn. So
it is
for learn.
Stefano, seriously, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I love having people on the show that have had experience, you know, that have high level roles too, because you provided a much different insight than other roles. And, you know, somebody that is very ingrained in the sports as a whole. I'd say that plurally. Sure. You're one of the rare guests that can actually do that. So
I appreciate that. Right. Thank you.
I appreciate your time. I know you're busy.
Thank you.
You know, I have a day job too, so I understand when that phone starts ringing, something needs to happen and decisions need to be made. So thank you for taking your time out of today and spending it with us. And I hope to see you in Indy. and shake your hand personally.
Yeah.
I know motorsports is a relational sport, and I come from relational industries. So virtually, you can only get so far, but when you can walk up and shake somebody's hand and have a real conversation with them, I strive for
anytime. I'm looking forward again. I renew the invitation. I try to make it. It's only two weeks from now. We're going to face the first race at the road course Grand Prix, Indy Grand Prix this weekend. You will have a chance to meet in person Mr. Dallara, Mr. Contremoli. Also this year, I take the opportunity here. We celebrate. Last year, it was a big event for Dallara. We celebrated the 50 years anniversary of the company. This year, we celebrate the first win at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway 25 years ago with Eddie Cheever, the first Dallara win at the Indy 500. So I lost the counts now how many we won after that. But now we did win now, and we finished last because we provide to the chassis everyone. But back in the days, obviously, it was different because we raced in competition with other manufacturers. So that victory marked a particular case for Dallara because opened up not only from the point of view of business a lot more opportunity, but it did pay off all the hard work that engineers, marketing people, commercial people had made in Dallara.
It's an impressive stat. 50 years of business is a long time.
It is, yeah.
It doesn't happen anymore. I was speaking with a friend of mine, and we were talking about some of these generational businesses, you know, that have lasting power and staying power. And that is, you know, it's very rare. You know, my company went 5 years before we were acquired. And then my wife's company this week is actually celebrating 10 years, which for us and our marriage, man, that feels like an eternity. I can't imagine doing that. So
you 100% agree. We recognized last week, we had the state of the Lara. So the illustrate to all the company here that we're growing, what we're doing, so forth. And I recognize some names, surprisingly, 9 person. They are actually, well, there will be 2 more, but in a few months, they're over 10 years with us. And you know how difficult, especially in this period in the US, is to find people, for a series, you know, for different circumstances, they work for so long in your company. So I recognize their loyalty to the company, and it's part also a personal satisfaction for me, first of all, but also a very rare situation in the U.S.
Well, good job.
No, thank you again. Thank you. I appreciate talking to you, and it was great to meet you on this video, and looking forward to anything we can do to help as a group, as a company, personal, and I appreciate the interview. Thank you, and thank you to the audience that you will listen to the interview.
Yes. Thank you. Your team is amazing. They've been great. As busy as I am, they babysit me, and they keep top of my inbox. So they're great. And I really appreciate them. So you got a great team there.
Thank you. Appreciate it.